ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Warwick's Weekly Wrap.
Well, joining us once again for a look at what's been going on in sport. And gee, there's been some stuff going on, hasn't there? Is Warwick Hadfield. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Good evening, and it's great to be here.
Gee, it was a very pleasant weekend on the couch, I must say. I spent a lot of great deal of time, I must say, flicking between the golf and the cricket. We'll start with the cricket first. I mean, I mean, there's a lot. I don't know. Do England deserve the views of Geoffrey Boycott? Probably not.
Geoffrey Boycott is one classic case of the pot calling the kettle black in so many respects. It has been pointed out that Geoffrey was absent in 74-75 when DK Lilly and J.R. Thompson were wreaking havoc against England, and poor souls like John Edrich and Michael Colin Cowdery were dragged away from, well, Cowdery in his case was dragged away from the fire in England to come out and face Tomo in Perth, the famous morning, Mr. Thompson. That's not going to do you any good. And Boycott probably wasn't to know before pulling out of the tour that Thompson and Lilly were going to do what they did. He didn't exactly put his hand up. I mean, he would have been still a current player, whereas Cowdery was 42. So, you know, I don't take a lot of notice of what Geoffrey Boycott says. And, you know, he's paid a lot of money to write those things for the Daily Telegraph. And, you know, good on him. He's still firing on all cylinders.
He's 85.
Yeah. And look, but a lot of the opprobrium that's heaped on England is deserved. One person in particular has caught my eye over the last few days, and that's the wicketkeeper, Jamie Smith. I think England's fallen for the old, what we might call it, the Adam Gilchrist trick. Adam Gilchrist was a one-off.
Yeah.
And everybody, I guess, and before that, Geoffrey Dujon for West Indies. But since then, everybody wants a wicketkeeper. You can bat at seven and rip a game apart. But that requires them not to do anything with the gloves. That requires them to score 2,000 runs, not just a century. Because when Jamie Smith dropped Travis Head, English heads dropped. I mean, their bowlers aren't good enough to create too many chances. And when one of them, an absolute pie, goes down. I mean, you saw Jofra Archer go onto his haunches. And then the even worse one was that drop of Joe Root's at first slip. Because if you look at the footage, Jamie Smith's gloves didn't even move, let alone his feet. Yeah. And to be a proper wicketkeeper, everything needs to go in unison. Your feet need to go and the gloves need to go. And for him to just, the only thing that moved was his head as he watched it go to Root, who promptly dropped it because he wasn't expecting it. He would have been thinking, well, that's the keeper's catch. And so, yeah, I mean, there are other things too. Jofra Archer bowls one spell at 150, one for 140, and he's a medium pacer by the third one. And
it's funny, isn't it? He's fast, but he's not fast for very long.
Well, once again, this preparation about England, you know, sitting in banana beds at Noosa, you know, if you're as old as me, and we bang on about being as old as me, but if you're old as me, you'll remember on the boat trip out to the Caribbean, the English captain said to Fred Truman, "How are you going to get fit to bowl, Fred?" And he said, "By bowling." And Jofra Archer, of course, has done very little of that. They had that one match at the ground in Perth, and then he didn't. There was only 2 days of cricket in the first test, so he didn't get to bowl too much there. And yeah, you know, the contretemps at the finish between him and Smith, it was great theatre. But it also, Smith did point out, you know, yeah, you're suddenly fired up when it
doesn't matter. It's not going to make any difference.
I mean, at the end of a test match, if you know you're going to lose, you like to do something to try and steal a bit of momentum for the next one. And Archer was probably trying to do that. But in the end, look, yeah, you take out Ben Stokes's boycott-like innings, and there's not a lot to write home about any of the so-called English tactics about what they were going to do when they got here. It was going to be some sort of modern quasi-body line. Well, Wood lasted one test and Jofra lasts just one session, and then he's just another medium pace. And the other guys are serviceable bowlers. Bryden Cass.
Bryden Cass is okay, isn't he?
Well, it was a great... When what's his name? Gus Atkinson finally got a wicket. Everyone yelled, finally, an Englishman's got a wicket. So, look, there's nothing worse to when you an English cricket team goes badly in Australia. They're like the only person, the person who's walked into a room, into a party, everyone's laughing and you're the only one who doesn't understand the joke, and you suddenly realise as you walk out the door that you were the joke. It's a, I don't know, I hope they can pick themselves up. And it was a reasonably combative test, enjoyable for a number of reasons. And, you know, Travis Head probably moved back down the order now.
Yes, onward to Adelaide. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Pat Cummins will be back. He says he says he's going to be back in interviews.
And they've got to fit Nathan Lyon into this side.
Well, yeah. Well, I suppose in Adelaide they do, don't they?
You wouldn't go into a test match in Adelaide without a spinner.
Without a spinner.
And also Australia's got to keep an eye on over rates as well, because there's some pretty hefty penalties for slow over rates.
But Jake Rutherall certainly cemented his place for the moment, you'd think.
Yes.
So, Usman Khawaja still as far away as he was.
Nathan McSweeney got a double century for Australia A. Did you see the result, Australia A versus England Lions?
Absolute thrashing of the England Lions.
Innings and 127 runs.
So, this is England's second string team. So,
And the bloke who got the century in England's second innings, Arthur Tribe, he's played 5 1-day internationals. Mm. Guess who for? The Island of Jersey. they're getting desperate.
Yeah.
They're out in the English Channel. Watch out, we might have someone who's a specialist in French cricket coming shortly. But they've got a few others they can look at. But yeah, I mean, Ollie Pope doesn't look like he's had enough cricket to be hold down the number three spot. Joe Root scored his first century in Australia, and Australians applauded that. You know, I mean, they made some people made some rude comments before he arrived, but that was quite a dignified innings.
He's a class player, Root. Come on, I mean, I think you know everyone. I think you know myself included. I mean, everyone I think said. You know, great job. Well done.
Yeah, 40 test centuries. You can't be as bad as some people. I think.
But they aren't headed in a good direction, though, are they? No.
Well, they're back on the banana beds in Noosa, you know.
Yeah.
And Brendan McCullum, the coach, reckons they train too hard before the second test. So, I don't know. I'm a believer in what Fred Truman said, you know, the best way to bowl. Although, of course, you know, everyone's managed these days, as Pat Cummins is, and Hazelwood's out for the duration now. He's going to be managed out. And, boy, yeah, a bloke by the name of Nisa comes in, takes a fifer.
I know, a bloke who's been around, you know, he's never been in the test side before, I don't think, has he?
He has played a few tests, but he's had more tours than he's had tests.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He's almost
in the race. But he won't get a spot in Adelaide.
Well, I mean, they'll say
if Pat Cummins is back, I mean,
yeah, they'll say horses for courses, and that's the reason they picked him in Brisbane ahead of Lyon, much to Lyon's anger. But you know, that's he's you might say of Nisa that he's had more tours than Ray Bright. We were discussing this at lunch the other day. For old Bright, he went on. I think according to Bob Merriman, who knows these things, former chair of Cricket Australia, Bright went to New Zealand on 8 different tours, and then the Lion, which everyone says, and on all those tours he didn't spin it once.
Oh no!
Oh dear, poor old Ray. Ray was famous. He was upset by something written in The Age by Patrick Smithers quite a few years ago, and he stormed up to Patrick and he looked him in the eye and he said, "You've quoted me incorrectly, wrongly, out of context."
Well, fair enough too. On to the golf, by the way.
I'm going to hand over to you.
Adelaide the week after next. It was absorbing viewing, I must say, because Cam Smith nearly won. But hats off to Rasmus Nygaard-Petersen. He's only 26. He got a lot of prizes for this. He not only won the tournament, it was his first DP World Tour trophy. He also gets a spot in the Masters.
Yeah, I saw that. That's biggest for him.
You know, it's big for him. And he's a very classy player, Nygaard-Petersen. Those who have seen him on the DP World Tour before would know this. And coming down the stretch, you know, Smith made a mistake. and then had a miraculous recovery from it on 17. And then Neergaard Pedersen made a mistake on 18 and made a miraculous recovery. Cam Smith, seeing Neergaard Pedersen's mistake hitting it right, he says, I'm going to play. He made the sensible decision. He thought, I'm going to take all risk out of this. All I have to do is hit the centre of the green, two putts, relying on Neergaard Pedersen to drop a shot, and I've won.
Hmm.
And that was reasonable thinking, you know. But here's the great psychology of golf. He doesn't get to go first, of course, because Neergaard Pedersen goes first. And he's leaving himself with a fairly lengthy putt. Smith has to then putt, and he lags it up there, but it's 5 feet short. And Rasmus Neergaard Pedersen sinks his. And that means then, all of a sudden, a putt which normally Smith would sink, but this one is to stay in the race to, you know, to be in the playoff, and he doesn't sink it.
I watched that and I thought, look, the Cameron Smith of 2 years ago would not have missed that, would he?
No. Look, I don't think so. Like, it's, you know, because he's a great short player, great putter, Cam Smith, and...
Is it poignant that it happened on the 72nd hole?
That's right.
As we know that L1V has now become LXX11. So it's not going to make any difference to him when he goes back to the Rebel Tour, if we can call it that. I don't know.
Who knows where all that's going to end. But it was a terrific golf tournament. And thank heavens, Warwick, that, you know, somebody no one had ever heard of, like last year, didn't win the tournament. And... Mm. That's happened a bit in the Australian Open recently. I mean, it's all very well to say the Stonehaven Cup is, you know, it's got Jack Nicklaus's and Gary Player's name on it. Those were back in the days when the sponsors made them come out. It's been a long time since it's really had that kind of status. But
now, did Royal Melbourne get its revenge on Rory McIlroy for saying that Kingston Heath is a better course?
Yeah, I think so. Because Rory hit it pretty well, but he couldn't get the hang of the putting. And let him down. Oh, look, you know, it's hard to feel sorry for him. He got paid $1 million or something to turn up, so whatever.
Yeah, but look, obviously the whole script was about the Australian Open is back where it belongs, Royal Melbourne, the best golf course. Well, called it the best golf course on radio last week.
I think it is. I think the composite course, when it's in good nick, is the best golf course in Australia. Mind you, you know, Kingston Heath is pretty good. I do think it probably should be in Melbourne all the time, for sure.
Well, did you see Paul McNamara has come out Paul McNamee, isn't it? It's McNamee, who's the tennis beat. He's come out and said he moved it to Sydney because he thought it would be better in many respects, but he accepts now that it should be back
in Melbourne. Yeah, I think because, you know, either it should either be at Kingston Heath, you know, or Royal Melbourne. Mm. I mean, there's an argument for Victoria, but I don't know that Victoria's long enough. These days.
What about Barwon Heads golf course?
Barwon Heads is a fantastic golf course, but it's too short. It's too short.
The Royal and Ancient of Australia.
Yeah, no, it is. But it's a marvellous little golf course, but it is little. It's too short. Mm. But I think that's where it should be. Because the truth is, you know, Royal Queensland is not a great golf course, not in the same league anyway. And Sydney doesn't have, I don't know, I haven't played the new Royal Sydney layout, but that's been redone. But apart from the Australian, they don't really have a course you'd think that could host it, you know. My own course, the New South Wales Golf Club, is the best course, I think, in Sydney. But it's too small to have a championship like that. And so it should be in Melbourne, I think, yeah.
Mm. Well, there we go. We've decided upon that. Let's hope the organisers are listening. And the next bloke they pay $1 million to bring out says the right thing.
Oh, no, well, it'll be him again. They've paid him again.
Yeah, he's out here again. I bet he won't make that faux pas again, I'm sure.
Hey, what's this about in soccer, by the way? I mean, mind you, the World Cup draw for Australia doesn't look too bad. USA, Paraguay, and then one of Turkey, Romania, Slovakia, or Kosovo. Mm. But how about this news today that FIFA is going to give drinks breaks during World Cup games? Basically, at the halfway point in each half, the ref blows the whistle and everyone stops to have a drink. In other words, it's a game now of four quarters.
Read the small print. It will be a boon to the broadcasters since it will open up more opportunities.
That's it.
For advertisements.
Oh, that's it. Is that it? Yeah. Do you reckon that's it?
Well, it was one of the first things I thought about. Given as we know, advertisements for the Super Bowl are as much a bigger story as the game itself or who plays at halftime, I would have thought that it'll be the case. Oh, of course, it might be a chance to present somebody with a peace prize in that quarter time. I don't know. Look, it's,
is there a more disreputable figure in world sport than Gianni Infantino? I don't think so.
I think a lot of people thought that. and some of our commentators in Australia have said those things. I mean, look. What was he taking the mickey when he did that, or was he serious when he did that?
Well, no, he's sucking up to Donald Trump, that's all.
Well, I mean, but he's not the only world leader, and if we can call the head of FIFA that, who's done that in the last 10 months or so.
I suppose that's true.
And a lot of people have played him off a break and got what they wanted, and that's might be what...
But mind you, this FIFA's drinks drink. Break in soccer, though, this will change things, won't it? I mean, you know, when do they blow the whistle?
Yeah, well, there's going to be some capacity for the referees to say, well, it will be ostensibly automatic at 22 minutes.
But what about if you're, you know, flying down the right wing?
or what, you know, and you're on a roll. Yeah. But look, I hope it doesn't turn out like we just saw in one of the women's big ball dash T20 games the other day. They went off for rain, came back for five overs and had a drinks break. The referees are going to have to make sure they police it properly. And you know, a team that's on a roll and, you know, often a break can break their concentration, break their momentum. So, yeah, it's going to change the game of association football.
I would have thought so. Quickly on the Formula One, Oscar Piastri didn't win. Well, I think we could have predicted that. Anyway, he's going to stay at McLaren. He's got a contract.
Well, he has to. He's got a contract.
Yeah. Does he have to, or could he break it? I suppose. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it would be, you know, one of those.
Because you'd think he'd have an incentive to go somewhere else. Mind you, they did seem to have the best cars, didn't they?
Yeah, but the big story that's come out of Formula One today is this license fee that they're willing to pay. It's been increased to
$12.50 or something.
No, over $1 million. The better you do, the bigger the license fee to compete in the next year. And $1 million, that's going to put a hole in Oscar Piastri's fob pocket.
Where will he find that change? In the glove box.
The ashtray. You wouldn't have an ashtray in a Formula One car, or a glove box for that matter.
Hey, by the way, in the AFL, anyway, good luck to him, Oscar Piastri, and may he have a bit of luck next season. It was a combination of... Someone said that if he hadn't... I hadn't looked at the numbers. Have you looked at these numbers? Someone said that if Piastri had not obeyed the team's order to yield his place to Lando Norris at Monza, he would now be world champion.
Yep, and Verstappen could have won as well as a result of that. Yeah. I think the thing that counted against Piastri, he had 7 wins, but he also had a few DNFs, and that means you don't get those little moments when you don't get just the
He shouldn't have spun out in Melbourne, should he?
Yeah, that's it.
He shouldn't have spun out.
Right back to the start.
Yeah. So. Hey, AFL, now, as we've discussed, well, look, it's in. I mean, it's passed now, so the stadium is going to be built, says the Tasmanian Parliament. Mm. It's been a lot of heartbreak, but still...
They said the Gordon Below Franklin Dam was going to be built too, and the pulp mill at Wesley Vale. This is Tasmania. there's a lot of people who like lying down in front of bulldozers. And on a serious note, there's going to be an awful lot of healing need to be done, because an awful lot of the friendships that went bust as a result of being pro-AFL team.
It's more pro-stadium.
Yeah, pro-stadium. Yeah, I mean, it was universal. Almost.
Everyone wants the team. It's just the stadium, yeah.
But I don't know. People call it the cargo cult mentality that Tasmania's had for some time. A lot of people are talking up the economic benefits. And look, from my time working for the Geelong Football Club, I was made very aware of the impact of just the full hotels, the full motels. Everybody got a gig. The university students got a casual work and so on. Whether that can apply in Tasmania when there's so much money to be repaid, and I understand lots of courses at TAFE have been cut, lots of other draconian measures have been taken to reduce spending, and there's taxes are likely to go up as well. So Yeah, Tasmanians are going to be paying for this one way or another for a long time. And they, and of course, the opening of the stadium is going to be delayed, so the matches are going to be played in Launceston. And you know more than anybody what that means to Hobartians and vice versa.
Oh, dear.
And,
well, it's not just Hobartians. People from the northwest coast won't go there either. It's hopelessly riven.
If Hobart and Launceston have got one, we've got to have one too.
No.
But anyway, look, it's there. There'll be an appointment of the coach very shortly, whether it's Nathan Buckley or not. I guess we have to wait and see. Then they'll start recruiting players, and the AFL will let us know what sort of benefits they're going to be given in the draft to make sure they get a team, a la the ones given to the Gold Coast and Greater Western Sydney over time, and the ones being given to the West Coast Eagles as well because of their parlous state.
So. Well, it's still a way off, isn't it? They're not not playing until, what is it, 2028?
2028,
yeah. Oh,
well. In the complex nature of setting up a football club to be competitive in the AFL, 2028 is not that far away.
No, it's not. It really isn't.
Brendan Gale has got a big job on his hands, and he's a very, very capable administrator. He, along with Brian Cook, should have got the job as CEO of the AFL when Andrew Demetrio left, but the politics got in the way of that, as it always does at the AFL.
Yeah.
They're the two best football sporting administrators in Australia, those two.
Yep.
But talent doesn't... It's not a meritocracy, as Rick Charlesworth famously said on this radio station,
He did. We better go, Warwick. But anyway, terrific. It's been a very exciting week. Have a chat next week. Last one for you. Yeah.
Good on you. Speak then, Philip.
All right, Warwick.
See ya. Bye. Good on you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.